Hey, hi, I'm Bonnie. Welcome to this podcast, Make Joy Normal, where we chat about homeschooling and family life. With my co-hosts, Elizabeth and Christina, we address your questions and topics in a way that can create more joy in our lives. Please submit any questions you have by email or voice message in the links in the show notes. If you found this episode valuable, please share it with a friend, like, or leave us a review. That's how we get the word out. Thanks for trying to make joy normal in your own life. Good afternoon, my listeners. So I'm going to be doing a couple of podcast episodes solo, partly because I'm leaving on a long trip and I would like to still be releasing podcast episodes because I have no shortage of things I'd like to say. So this is a talk that I've given a few times and I wanted to just sort of share it here because I feel like a lot of the talks I've done over the years in different conferences and different topics. And so I thought, well, this is a great avenue to share them on my podcast. So this talk is about getting along. So getting along is really important, and getting along is actually one of the, I think really is our path to holiness, learning how to get along with other people. But also getting along with our kids, first of all, gives good example, but also it just makes the day run so much smoother to get along and to do our part. You know, we're always telling our kids, you know, get along, get along with each other. But the reality is that we have to take the lead in that and accept that that's the reality of our life. So what is it we would expect from our kids? We should expect the same from ourselves. And we're not going to do it perfectly. And I know I preface almost every episode with that statement, but the reality is that we aren't going to do this perfectly and we need to be okay with that. And when we mess up, we just get back on the horse, get back on track. Just make that a reality of our life that we're going to mess up all the time and we have to just start over again. So one of the biggest drawbacks to not getting along is that it just takes a lot of time. Now, this is the reason many of us don't have our kids in school is because we recognize, or one of the reasons, we recognize that in school, there's an awful lot of behavioral management happening in the classroom. And with that behavioral management, it means every moment spent in behavioral management is one moment that education isn't happening, right? Well, it's the same in our own houses. It's even bigger than that. Every moment spent in behavioral management is a moment spent in not getting housework done, not getting an education happening, not getting out the door in time for our appointments and various other things. So not getting along takes a huge amounts of time. And in order to get along better, you know, we need some tools, right? And these were tools that I had to go back to over and over and over again. Even when I do them really well, I had to go back to them because we forget, right? And we're fallen human beings and lots of different reasons. So the tools that I think are really important are practicing, of course, order, assuming the best of others, and allowing some time for self-reflection. Okay, so I want to sort of expand on those thoughts for a minute. So practicing anything requires work. If you be a good pianist or be a good singer or be a good sewer or whatever, you have to put the time in. It doesn't just happen overnight. It doesn't just happen that we get good at something because we decide we want to be good at something. We actually have to put the time in. And so practice requires work. So if we're practicing getting along, that requires work on our part. And if you are in some place that feels like there's a lot of discord in your home or whatever, it's going to take longer than if people are generally getting along pretty well. And it's actually our job to establish the environment in our own homes that is conducive to getting along. It's not our kids' job to lay the foundation of getting along. It's not our kids' job to create an environment of joy. It's not our kids' job to be the example. That's putting way, way, way too much on a child. It's our job as parents. And a lot of times, maybe we didn't have good example ourselves. So we have to put the time on and we have to be gentle with ourselves. So we have to start in really small ways, you know, and sometimes depending on how each individual operates, sometimes it means, you know, you get up in the morning and you make a little prayer, you know, Lord, just help me get along and set an example of getting along for this first hour of the day, for this next 20 minutes, for breakfast, right? Choose something. Please help me. Lord, help me with my tone of voice. Lord, help me to see my children as blessings and treat them in that way. You know, Lord, help me to recognize that when my child does something dumb, it's because they're a child and children do dumb things. And that's just part of being a child. And I did dumb things when I was a kid too. So instead of barking at them or instead of coming down on them, that I'm gentle with them. right? So gentle with yourself, gentle with your child. That's how we do the work. And I'm not suggesting that you do all of those things. I'm suggesting that you choose one to start with, right? Because it's when we experience success and build a foundation of something, that's when we actually experience the joy of accomplishment, the joy of success, the joy of moving forward in our lives, the joy of becoming a better person, growing in holiness. And we have to do that in small ways. And it's the successes that will allow to build more successes onto those initial successes, even if they're very, very small. So maybe you even pick one child, the one you have the easiest relationship with, and you think, okay, I'm just going to make sure when this child is being sassy or being rude or being demanding or whatever it is they're being, that I'm going to just take a deep breath and respond to them appropriately. And then maybe you, when you sort of nailed that down and you've had some success with that for a week or 2 weeks, then you apply that to another child. Okay, you know, I'm just going to try to respond better to this child. You sort of build yourself up to the child that maybe you're having the most difficulty with in that moment, right? I mean, we sometimes have easy children, sometimes have difficult children, but it's a guarantee that all children have difficult periods in their life. And so, you know, we're not sort of singling somebody out like this is the problem child and therefore that's the one I need to really hone in on or work on. The reality is that all of our children, even the one that you think is the easiest right now, is going to go through difficult times. And that is something that we're going to have to work with. And in fact, those children who are, you know, tend to be easy, especially when they're young, it's a bit of a blow when you see them go through a difficult time, maybe when they're 12 or maybe when they're 20 or whatever. So that practicing with all of our kids, with our husband, with all the people in our life, sometimes we have to actually look beyond our own children. If we know that our tone of voice is negative or our attitude is negative, we actually have to start with the people it's easiest with, like our friends. It's so easy to be nice to our friends because they don't bug us in the same way that our children do. So put in the time, right? It requires work. And a lot of times that work is actually getting up and dealing with it one-on-one in person. And I know sometimes that's hard, especially when we're, you know, we have a new baby, we're nursing the baby or whatever, but trying to get your kids to cooperate or trying to instill a situation where you are getting along requires us to actually be very physically present with that child or with the children that aren't getting along, as opposed to yelling at them from another room or trying to make them do something from a distance. We actually have to get up and be there. So that's kind of the work required when we talk about getting along. We have to practice. We have to put the time in. And we have to acknowledge every single day that that's actually our job and not anybody else's. It's the parents in a household's job to do that. And it's okay. It's okay if you're starting from ground zero. You know, you can work your way up incrementally. And with every increment, your life will get a little easier, which is the thing that motivates you to keep going. So the second thing that I talked about was in order to get along better, we have to employ some tools. The second tool is order. And in my world, I'm not a naturally well-ordered person. It's taken a lot of intentional work for me to become a well-ordered person. And I still have areas in my life I haven't attained that goal in. But order allows us to be kinder. Something as simple as being able to find our stuff helps us avoid problems, helps us avoid getting in bad moods, helps us avoid wasting time. Managing our environment simplifies our life. And the main thing is that it makes more space in our brains to be kind. If our brain is really cluttered with all the things that need to be done and all the stuff and where is all the stuff and where do I access all the stuff and why aren't these socks where I want them to be when I want them to be there, you know, the more we simplify our lives and streamline the environment, the easier it is to be kind. And being kind is a big component of getting along because we have to think kind thoughts. We have to act kind ways. We have to model kind behavior. And that's really where getting along is fostered, right? So why would we not do whatever we can in our life to open the door to be kinder? And order is one of the ways that we open that door, you know, to be kind. So I think order is a really vital component of this. I've talked about order on the podcast before, and you guys have heard me talk about the various methods that are out there. Some people don't need a method, but for me, Fly Lady was groundbreaking. The Fly Lady book, Sync Reflections, was just absolutely groundbreaking for me back in the day. And the other book that was really helpful was, and I can never remember the name, The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. That also a fantastic book, which I, you know, 20 years in after starting sort of The Pursuit of Order. That was the book I read, and it helped me again. And I'm reading a book right now. It's going to sound macabre, but it's called Swedish Death Cleaning. And it's kind of one of the same thing. You don't have to be dying. You don't have to be old even to be at Swedish death cleaning. But the idea is you are reducing the clutter in your life so that your children don't have to deal with it, right? And I think that's a real gift we can give ourselves, because it means that in my older years, I'll have more time, you know, that's clutter-free. But also when I do die, or when I get elderly and I need care, if that happens, that I've had a simple life, that my children can go through my things more simply and downsize for me or sell a house or whatever, you know, that all those things at different stages of our life, we need to be looking at those things. And again, please be gentle with yourself, be gentle with your family. Start with you. When it comes to order, start with yourself, right? If you don't have, you know, good habits in order, you can't expect your family to have it, and you can't expect to be, you know, getting annoyed with them because they're not doing it. Just start it yourself. Do your own business. Take care of your own business. And, you know, that will eventually ripple out where you can start helping younger people streamline their lives as well. But really important that we begin that journey with ourselves, and we begin it gently, which is the big attraction to me about the book Sync Reflections, was she refers to this as baby steps. Just learn how to gain order of your life by mastery. Same thing when we're talking about kindness and our tone of voice. We want to work towards mastery. Therefore, we start small. You master one small thing. You know, you master getting the kitchen tidied up before you go to bed, or you master cleaning off your desk that you like to do schoolwork at with the kids, or your breakfast table. When you master one small area of your life, and you make that an easy habit before you actually move on to something else. And that's huge for us to be able to manage our life bit by bit, right? And it doesn't feel overwhelming that way. So the other thing, in order to get along better, the other tool that I mentioned was assuming the best of others. This is really hard because we like to blame others, to have something be somebody else's fault. You know, I don't like to be blamed for things. Therefore, you know, taking the blame for things is uncomfortable. But if we assume the best of others, we really are doing what we would hope everybody else would do for us, right? So instead of assuming that, you know, maybe we were being lazy and that's why the dishes aren't done, we would hope that our husband would assume, oh, there was something happened with the kids and I got distracted and the house is a mess because somebody got hurt, or somebody had to go to the doctors, or somebody had an emotional crisis. You know, that's the way we have to look at the other people, especially the people in your home. They are your closest neighbor, right? We have to look at them tenderly, and we have to assume the best of them and not jump to conclusions. Even if, say, somebody barks at you about something or is rude to you about something, maybe we just take a moment to think, I wonder if something's bothering them or they're stressed about something. You know, we can train ourselves to be less reactive when we assume the best of others, right? It aids us in getting along and setting the example of getting along, because it puts us into a spirit of empathy. We're constantly converting and showing our children the way of conversion. So that is, assuming the best of others is such a profound act of charity that it weighs hugely into the example of holiness that we give to our kids. If we can assume the best of them, the best of our spouse, when you're talking about other people, assume the best of others. So we're constantly converting and constantly showing our children the way of conversion. We convert somebody most effectively by, this is a quote from St. Thomas Aquinas, taking them by the hand and guiding them. So we assume the best of them. Say, for example, your child is having a meltdown because they can't do their math. They did it yesterday, they did it the day before, and you have no idea why today they're not giving you cooperation. So if we assume the best of them, what that means is we think, okay, there must be some reason why. Now, you know, it could be just stubbornness, it could be, you know, irritability, we don't know, but we have to assume that stems from somewhere. So if we assume the best of them is, I wonder if something's going on, I wonder if they're not feeling well, I wonder if they had their feelings hurt and haven't sort of processed that, I wonder if there's something going on with them, maybe they didn't sleep very well, maybe they have a toothache, we don't know. Let's assume there's a reason why they're behaving this way about their math today. And so we take them by the hand and lead them. So that could look a couple of different ways. One way is we could just say, would you like me to help you do your math today? How about if I go back and we look at, you know, what we did in the last couple of days, and I'll just reteach it to you today. Would that help you? Would you think that would help you to understand this better? Or Another way of assuming the best of them is saying, you know, math might be really hard for you today. I'm not sure what's going on, but I think maybe a snuggle might be better than math. And would you like a snuggle? Or would you like to have, you know, a drink of milk? Or would you like to me to read you a story? What could we do that would help you to feel better right now? Because I feel like maybe you're not feeling very well. Now, we could assume that the child is going to take advantage of that situation and the next day sort of pull the same thing theoretically. But think about ourselves, okay? When our husband gets home from work, say everybody was in a bad mood and there was a big crisis and he was like angry, you know, or annoyed. Well, what the hell went on around here today? And, you know, why is everybody in such a bad mood? I don't know what's going on here. This is ridiculous. Okay. What we would hope from him is, you know what? I can see that things really went sideways today and I don't know what happened, but what can I do for you? Can I make you a cup of tea? Would you like to go for a walk? Would you like to have a hot bath? Can I just hold you? What could be helpful for this situation? Because it looks to me like things really went sideways and you name it. What can I do? What can I do to help? What a different response from us, rather than being, you know, griped at or complained at or criticized, that we are treated tenderly and that's what we want for our kids. So we wouldn't take advantage of that, right? We wouldn't, the next day when our husband comes home from work, you know, act like we had a bad day so that we would get that treatment again. We wouldn't do that. We would just appreciate and feel appreciated. So we don't have to worry about that. We don't have to worry about over loving and being overly tender with our children, because I don't think that that's something we could ever overdo. We just have to take them by the hand and guide them. So in whatever way that looks. So that is discipleship at its absolute finest. That is teaching our children how to be holy by being holy and tender with them. So the last tool that I had mentioned in order to get along better is time for self-reflection. Okay. I'm a big assessor myself. I like to step back from situations and spend time assessing. It's something I started practicing when my children were very young, and it plays out so well in the sense that we end up having more time. It seems like, how could I possibly find the time for that? But you end up having more time. So I think time for self-reflection as an individual and time for self-reflection as your family as a whole, planned downtime. Okay. We're a busy culture. If we plan downtime for ourselves and also for our family as a whole, our experience of that is very powerful. So we need opportunities to gain perspective and to be able to have meaningful conversations and to be together without feeling the pressure of getting all the things done. Years ago, one of the ways we did that as a family was by instituting like a Saturday morning coffee time, so that, you know, Saturday tended to be our work day, you know, so my husband was gone all week and I was doing our regular weekly things that we do, our homeschooling and our music lessons or whatever we were doing. And Sunday was a day for mass and for rest. But Saturday tended to be our work day. And at some point we thought, you know, we're missing out on just some really important conversation time. And it doesn't mean we have to have deep, meaningful conversations, but it means that we need to carve out time. And so, you know, Saturday morning coffee times became sort of a 2-hour long thing that we just carved out time. Yeah, this is a work day, but we're going to carve this out first. Okay. That matters to us and that's important to us. And everything else just goes on hold because this matters. And I think that time for self-reflection for ourselves about, you know, what's going on right now? Why am I kind of in a bad mood these days? Why is my child in a bad mood these days? Why are we, why does life feel so hectic? Let me just assess the way we're approaching things. Is there anything we can streamline? Is there anything we can cut out? And if we don't reflect, it's very, very hard to make changes for improvement. So that's just a few thoughts I have on this short little episode about getting along and how important it is to get along, mostly because, well, there's lots of reasons why it's important to get along, but it takes a lot of time to not get along. And so even though these things might seem like, okay, well, I have to put time into this. Yes, absolutely you do. But instead of putting the Band-Aid on of constantly getting after our kids about not getting along, to sort of step back and say, okay, where do I need to put the time in? Where do we need to put the time in as a family in order to spend less time not getting along? So I hope that's helpful for you. God bless. Have a wonderful afternoon.